It's Monday, October 29th, 2012, and welcome to episode 139 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And this time, we've got some fresh news coming for you, fresh off the press. We're recording this session just a little bit early. Cindy's going to be traveling next week, but we wanted to just kind of record some of our initial impressions of the Apple event that occurred yesterday.
That's right. Big news.
Big news coming up. So we've got a couple of new models of the iPad. We have the iPad Mini and then the new iPad 4, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And then we'll also share our technology picks of the week, a couple of projects that's prompted these picks of the week this time, explain a little bit of that. And,
and my discovery.
Discovery of the week there. So we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about that. So here we go. We are recording this on Thursday, October 25th, 2012. Just wanted to let you know that we are recording this segment a little bit early, as Cindy's going to be traveling and out of town next week.
That's right. So you were kind enough to adjust your plans a little bit so I could be involved with
this. That's the beauty of podcasting. We can put it together here, and whenever we do our edits, we'll just splice this one in. But it's also kind of a very good time, because we're always talking about items in the news. And yesterday, Apple had a major event.
They did. And if you know, something I've noticed, if you've missed it in the news, you can't miss it from commercials.
Yeah.
Because all of these technology companies are pushing these things hard. And the ad campaigns, they're wonderful. They're awesome commercials. I don't think there's anybody in the world, whether they use technology or not, that doesn't know what's going on with the iPad and Windows 8.
Yeah. And then Google, I actually saw a Google Chromebook commercial last night. Last night was the first game of the World Series, and I actually happened to catch one of those. So they are, you know, all three, you know, Google, Apple, and Microsoft are really starting to heavily advertise.
Definitely.
So we thought we'd just take a few minutes because one of the rumors that's been floating around for a number of months now was the new iPad, what they're calling the Mini.
That's right.
The iPad Mini. So we finally have a 7-inch tablet.
We do. And actually, you and I had a little wager on how much it would cost. And
I don't remember who won. What did I say?
You won. You won.
And the official price was $329.
It was. I said $299 or $350, and you split it down the middle.
Yeah.
You were correct.
Yeah. So, you know, there's the conversation going on and whether that's, you know, an appropriate price for that size device, because I got my Google Nexus 7 back in the summer for $199 for the 8 gigabyte. And then I just did notice that Google sold out of those devices. So we're looking about $249 for the 16 gigabyte, the next size up.
Well, and people were talking a lot about, would the iPad Mini be something that was easier for schools to afford? And this is still, that's a lot of money for a school to be able to afford a classroom set or more.
And Apple kind of targeted, I mean, I saw several articles, you know, for the education market in particular. And then, of course, we're still having this debate. You know, Steve Jobs said, you know, 7-inch tablet wasn't any good. It wouldn't show that. So we're still having this debate between the 7-inch size, the 10-inch size, and then, you know, going back down to the phone. So we have all these multiple devices, and you know, I don't think anybody solved it. So we have all these different form factors, which becomes very expensive very quick.
It is, because I feel like I need different sizes for different things. There are things I cannot read lengthy documents on my phone. It just doesn't work for me. And I've not tried it on a 7-inch. But the iPad works for me.
Yeah, well, I've got the 7-inch Google Nexus, and it's a perfect e-reader. How long ago was it? Whenever Kindle came out, 2007. You know, some of the first 7-inch, actually, 7-inch Kindles, I believe, back then. And I said it was too small. You know, we did not have that form factor before then, and they came out with the Kindle DX, which was, you know, kind of like the size of a sheet of paper. And now, and I just saw, I think, Kindle's discontinuing the DX model because I think the market's kind of spoken and said, you know, that model is one of the more popular ones. So Apple's kind of going through the same transition with the iPad 3. And then the other, and this one I think caught, you know, all the tech journalists by surprise, was the new iPad. It's called the new iPad or iPad 4, whatever we're using for the naming convention now. But that one completely caught a lot of people off guard.
Yeah, I had heard nothing about that even being on the horizon.
Yeah, because they just came out with the new iPad, you know, in the middle of summer. So you're looking about a six-month product cycle before you have the new iPad.
Right.
So I'm sure there's a lot of schools that might not be very happy if they just bought, you know, 100 or 1,000.
Well, and anyone who thinks they're cutting edge, right, you know, it's a little shot to the ego because you think you have the newest. And, you know, and that makes me wonder when the next generation of iPhones. Are they closer on the horizon than we think?
Well, yeah, but the iPhone 5 just did come
out. Right,
and I think really why one of the big reasons for introducing the new iPad 4 was the Lightning connector.
Oh, okay.
Because the iPhone 5 came out with that new Lightning connector. The new iPods all have the Lightning connector. And the iPad was the only one that was still using the older 30-pin connector.
So they're compatible.
So, well, you have to bite the bullet sometime and go through that. But unfortunately for schools, you know, if you have like one of the sync carts, charging carts, and say you have the iPad 1s with the 30-pin connector,
mm-hmm,
and you go buy a new iPad, those connectors aren't going to work, so you're going to have to buy new carts.
Mm.
So it's you know, always kind of a double-edged sword, but the revamping of the product line, you have to be careful that you make sure that, you know, you're getting a long enough life for your customers that they actually get the value out.
Right. I'm looking at the iPad compare models on the Apple site right now, and they have iPad mini, iPad 2, and iPad with Retina display. So that's all they have. They don't have anything in between, and when you go down and compare the attributes, it has the chips, but then when you look at connectors, you've got the 30-pin, and then all of the Retina display have the Lightning.
Yeah, that's what they were trying to standardize on across, mm-hmm, because, you know, everybody's going to have to retool now and get the new Lightning connectors, which, you know, $29.99 or $39.99, those cost add up as well. Or if you have like a speaker dock and in your car stereo, all of those
hotel rooms.
Exactly. Yeah. So I didn't know if they were going to still keep around the iPad 2, but it's still out there on their site.
It is.
Okay. So what is that, $3.99?
$399 for the 16 gig, and then plus 3G is up to $529.
Okay, so, I mean, you can kind of see logically where they're at, because I think they start with the iPod Touch at $299.
Yeah, and
that's why I said that that's why I thought that the iPad Mini, I thought, well, they're going to have to price it higher than their iPod Touch. So that's why I said $329 there. And then you have the older iPad 2 for $399.
Right.
And then, like I said, the new iPad. So you're not even going to be able to buy the one that you could buy this summer. And as I said, they're just wanting to do that to get rid of the Lightning or the older 30-pin connectors.
And they start at $499.
$499 and for what, a 16 gig?
Yes,
or, okay,
16 gig.
16 gigabyte. Apple's definitely been in the news a lot lately, so they had their big announcement, the iPhone 5's out, so they kind of have their product line filled out now.
And everything's over $300. They're not going under that line for the iPads now, mm-hmm, with the iTouch, mm-hmm, you know, they do. But it's interesting to me because there's just something, you know, it's kind of like when you lose weight, there are those magic numbers you want to get, mm-hmm, under. And it just feels like they just have no intention to ever go under that 300 mark with anything with iPad.
And I've always said for schools, to me, and, you know, for what it's worth, I've always said that $99 is, mm-hmm, kind of the magic number mark, as far, because the other education announcement, you know, for education, they were looking at doing some books and things and starting to mm-hmm, fill out some of the electronic books and things. So, and you're going to have something cheap enough for the average, you know, parent and student to afford before you can, you know, have that out there in mass for every student to have in a one-to-one program. So it's interesting times. And right now as we speak and tomorrow and over the weekend, I think we'll be discussing, you know, kind of talking Apple on this show. But next time, mid-November, we'll probably be talking a lot more about Windows 8. Because Microsoft is coming out with all of their new devices, and It's going to be, I think it's, people are going to be surprised by how many different devices, all kinds of different form factors, a lot of innovation going on, as well as the enterprise side of things on the server side. So, you know, next time we'll probably be talking a little bit more about Windows 8.
That'll be really interesting to see how that unfolds. And like I said, they are just advertising the heck out of that.
Yeah, I think I saw they had like a $1 billion advertising budget.
Wow.
Which is just, you know, incredible. Mm-hmm. So all the companies are out there. We're right pre-holiday, so this is the hot time of year. So as November and then Christmas approaches, I think that's what all the major vendors are shooting for the holiday season.
And get on those wish lists.
Yep. My technology pick of the week this week is a couple of video conferencing apps. I've been working with some faculty and students, and we're starting to incorporate video conferencing a little bit more, and I call this personal video conferencing. And the two apps that I want to particularly mention this time is Skype, which I think probably most people have heard of Skype.
Absolutely.
So that one is really starting to grow and take hold. It's been out there for years. But, you know, from time to time, we just kind of need to revisit some of the things that we've done in the past. And then the other one that I don't know, I was helping some students because we do some Google Docs work.
Mm-hmm.
And Google has something called Google Hangouts.
I'm not familiar with that
one. So if you have a Gmail account, whether you realize it or not, they're really starting to push their Google Plus service.
Yes.
And the easiest way to get to it, if you are a Gmail user, if you click up in the upper left-hand corner, they'll, like for my example, mine, it says Tom Plus. You know, my account's Tom Grissom. So if you click on that, that takes you to the Google Plus account. And then they do things, they use the term circles. So, you know, Facebook,
right,
you have friends. So in Google Plus, they use the term circles. So you can essentially kind of organize your contacts by the different circles and things that you travel in. So I have a photography circle. I have a woodworking circle. I have an education circle. Depending upon those interests, you can place the people that you follow. Then whenever you click on whatever particular circle, you're only seeing the relevant contact information out there. But in addition to that, they have something called Google Hangouts, which is kind of like a Skype session, except it provides a little bit broader service because you can, you know, do a two-way video conference call. And again, you've probably seen these on some TV advertisements. If you see any Google commercials, you'll see a little Hangout segment. I've seen them on TV. But what's really neat is you can have up to 10 individuals on a call, and they call it a Hangout.
Mm-hmm.
So what's neat is it's got some technology built into it. So whoever's talking, you'll have like a ribbon of people across the bottom. Let's say we have five people. And person number one talks, so they'll be in the center of the screen in a big screen.
Very cool.
Person number three talks, then they will take over the center of the screen.
Wow. And all the audio and video goes over your, mm-hmm, all through your computer. And
correct. Correct.
Very nice.
And one additional step beyond that, you have the choice. If you have a YouTube channel, which of course you would if you have a Google account, there's a checkbox that says record this session.
Oh.
So you could do a recorded session of a Google Hangout and then post it out on YouTube.
Very nice.
A number of educators out there using that for just kind of back and forth. I use it for professional development, you know, right, just talking to different folks and things out there online.
But I'm thinking even for meetings sometimes that we have that are, you know, we're spread across the country,
right,
and things like that. And that's a great way to have it and not depend on one person to take the minutes.
Right. Which, you know, I have used, but that brings up another interesting problem. And unless you know, use this type of communication problem, I was just doing something with somebody in California.
Mm-hmm.
So we suddenly have to start thinking about time zones very quickly.
Oh, that's right.
And then I was talking to somebody in North Carolina. And it's like, well, now I've got somebody in California and somebody in North Carolina, and here we are in the central time zone.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, you know, start considering those time zones.
Plan everybody's schedule. Yeah, right. That's what with our Library of Congress program, mm-hmm, we work with partners all over the country. Mm-hmm. And so everything tends to get scheduled on Eastern time since that's
right,
where the HQ is.
But, right, yeah.
But it is something you have to think about. And whenever I get notifications, I have to look at, make sure I look at that so I don't get there an hour early or an
hour
late.
Exactly. And it's kind of just a bonus pick here. You know, we've mentioned Wolfram Alpha a number of times on this program. It's been a previous technology pick of the week. But I use Wolfram Alpha just to verify my time zones. And Wolfram Alpha is, if you're not familiar with it, it's a computational knowledge engine. In fact, some of the questions that Apple's Siri uses whenever you speak into the Siri assistant, Wolfram Alpha actually goes out there and provides some of those answers. So I'm going to type in a question in Wolfram Alpha. So I'm going to say, what time is it in, and I'm just going to say Los Angeles. Or I could say, you know, London, Paris, France, whatever it might be. So I'm going to press enter, and Wolfram Alpha will go out there and calculate. And I don't know if you can see my screen here, but on the screen it says we're recording this at 12:30 p.m., and that's Pacific Daylight Time. So it's 12:30 p.m. in Los Angeles, California, and here where we're recording in Charleston, Illinois, it's 2:30.
Oh,
so
nice.
There's a 2 hour.
So you can see them both on the same screen.
You see your local clock and you see the clock, you know, that you're comparing to. So that's really handy. And I, particularly if I'm talking to somebody, you know, like in London or in Germany or somewhere where it's, those things just don't roll off the top of my head. What time is it? You know, I can tell you general, you know, it's like 6 hours or whatever ahead, but I always check it with Wolfram Alpha, and it's just easy enough to do. And it's, I really like having that time. That time comparison out there.
Yeah.
Or this time of year, we're almost coming up on our time change. So it's like you got to start thinking about that
right.
as well.
And what, yeah, exactly. So for, you can work accordingly.
Right, for daylight savings time.
Another thing we've started using with meetings that I've been doing is either doodle.com, and there's another one, I can't think of the name of it, but basically it's like a survey tool. And you put in its different options for planning meetings.
For open times.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone just checks when they're available.
Yeah.
And we've been using that a lot. And I really like that because it's better than 50 emails back and forth to one another. And everyone can just put it in and, and we can get a tally of who's free, you know, what day, what time has the most people available.
Yep. If you get that, let me know. We'll put it in the show notes.
Sure.
Okay. So your technology pick of the week, kind of picking up on what we were talking about earlier.
It is. I actually, a friend of mine had recently purchased a new book for her iPad, and it was an enhanced book.
Okay.
And I hadn't, I've not had a lot of experience with the enhanced books, and they are just so cool. I mean, they really are. This one, she actually bought one that is based on a musician, and and it has interview clips, photos, audio, the music.
So it's like a multimedia book, essentially.
Very multimedia. And in fact, it has us thinking about, we create kind of resource kits with our primary sources in our office on different themes. And we're starting to think maybe we can create some sort of along these same lines. Where we're reinforcing, because the whole, you know, one of the great things about what we do with the Library of Congress is the multimedia format. And so pulling in the audio and the visual and documents and everything, and these enhanced books, it's like, wow, that does it all. It gives you the information, but then it also gives you an opportunity to see it differently, hear it differently, and things like that. But the enhanced books are very cool. And so I was kind of browsing through, and there are history books. One thing I thought looked really neat, cookbooks. Because I was like, that's great. Show me how I'm supposed to be doing that.
Show a little video.
Right. And but that seems, you know, I don't know. I know they've been around for a while. I'm kind of shocked that it's not much more popular than it is.
Well, that was part of Apple's announcement yesterday. They were talking about the education, and then Apple's term is iBooks. You know, so you have the iPads and the iBooks.
Right.
But the only thing there is in the in their iTunes store, whenever you buy it, and you said you bought one from the iTunes store?
I did.
So, you know, it's just like buying a song, you know, from iTunes, except it's a book. But it's in the iBooks format, which means that you are limited to just using it on the iPads.
Exactly.
Is the only downside. But the good side of that is, you know, it's supported by the Apple hardware, and, you know, all the video playback and sound. It's just a multimedia experience.
Right. Because I also have Nook books or Nook on my iPad. And I looked, and the Nook Enhanced Books will not work on your iPad.
That's from Barnes & Noble.
Right. And so there's still that division of different books on different formats.
Yeah,
and so I have some books in my iBook library,
right.
And I have some in my Nook library.
Right. And see, I primarily have been staying with Amazon for the fact that I can have a Kindle app for the iPad.
Right.
I can have a Kindle app for the PC or for the Mac or, you know, and I kind of gotten into that issue with my Nexus 7 because they gave you $25 free whenever you bought it, like a gift certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So I started buying some books, but those books are out there in my, you know, for my Nexus 7 in the Google Play Store.
So
that works there. You know, if you buy the iBooks, that works in the iPad.
Right.
And then, you know, if you buy the Barnes & Noble Nook, although I do believe that the Nook has a PC app, and it does have an iPad app too, doesn't it?
Yes.
So, okay.
Yes.
So
it does have the iPad app, but it's still, I can't open my iBooks in the Nook library.
There's some compatibility issues to be worked out.
It's a little territorial.
Yeah. Well, like I said, everybody's trying to go out and market their device so they can kind of be the market leader. And right now it's a big fight going on because of the competing standards.
It is. And I did put the Nook app on my Droid, my phone,
mm-hmm.
and my books came up from my Nook library on my phone, which was nice.
Which goes back to you when we were talking earlier about the multiple devices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one screen just it doesn't seem to do it. We're really customizing, you know, for our phones to have with us all the time, a very small screen. But yet that's not a very pleasant reading experience.
Oh, no.
So then we go to our tablet or to our PC or to our HD TV, you know, depending upon the problem, that gets expensive after a while.
And
very
I've yet to try to hook any of my devices to our television. I know
it's easy.
That's what I hear. So maybe that'll be my homework this weekend to see what I can do by hooking some things to the
television.
Again,
everybody in the different ecosystems, whether you're Google, Apple, or Microsoft, everybody has a different way to do it. And the way Apple does it is they usually want you to go through an Apple TV.
Right.
So that's another purchase to get that.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones, like my ePad transformer on my Android, that's just simply a mini HDMI cable. So I just plug in a little $3 HDMI cable to my TV, and I see it full screen.
And it works.
Yeah, it works great. I watch a lot of I subscribe to several podcasts, both video and audio, so I can throw a video podcast up there, and it works great. Going through a great big sound amplifier and everything.
Nice. You know, I wonder how many people out there are completely brand loyal.
It's getting harder to do.
It is. It really is.
So, of course, I mean, everybody has their own standards, but whenever you start locking yourself into that system, like I said, with that Nexus 7 and things, I mean, with that Google store, my preference is to do Amazon because I kind of have that digital locker out there, but then I'm captive to that market, so. But, they're all going through and trying to build their own ecosystems. And again, next time we'll know a lot more because Microsoft Windows 8 is, of course, going to have the Windows Store. So here we go again.
Here we are.
with some of those. So.
So it may get better before, or it may get worse before it gets better, right?
I think so, unfortunately. But kind of the saving grace out there is HTML5 because we can completely bypass all of this apps and start doing web apps based upon a universal standard that all three of these players can understand. But, everybody's out there to make some money in the market. So I think you're going to start seeing a lot more subscriptions and things along those lines, because it's expensive, it's time consuming, downloading apps and just maintaining all the updates.
Right.
We're essentially recreating the personal computer experience with the Flash plugins that we were trying to get around, and we're creating a little bit different problem. So that's great. And then on the iBooks things, you just kind of, one of the nice things on the iPad is you have that visual bookshelf out there. So
it is nice. I mean, it really is I'm a old-fashioned book lover. I like to hold it in my hands, but I'm slowly, I can't, I wondered if I can't read in the car. I get motion sickness.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe I'll try with an electronic. Nope, can't do that in the car either.
Yeah.
So it is a true reading experience.
Well, I said the same thing, about the feel and the smell and the touch of the books, but I'm gradually being won over to just the convenience factor, if nothing else. Buying a book and then being downloaded in less than a minute is just an absolutely fantastic time that we're living in.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right.
being able to highlight and all those things in it.
Yeah, the annotations. It's about time to talk a little bit more about ebooks in one of our episodes because the technology has changed quite a bit just in the last year. But that's one of the holdbacks for education, because you do want to take like notes and things in the margin. And then as a 7-inch device, is that going to be big enough to do those annotations because of the fine motor skills that you're going to need for a smaller device? So, yeah, as usual, kind of a moving target out there.
I was going to say, we cover this and it just opens up more we want to talk about in the future, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. That wraps it up for episode 139 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
And Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.